Okay, the powers that be, which I guess I have to take the blame for, have allocated us 20 minutes for this feedback session. So it is not a particularly long amount of time to consider the six themes that we talked about. So I'm hoping, Holger, well, you're in the next slot, not this slot. So we are going to deal with them. I'd like to cover all six. If we do run over a bit, that's fine, but I think really highlights the points that came out of your groups. And I'm going to go through, and I know from the notes that I've seen that most of the groups only in fact did consider two, and therefore there are some of the topics that only got considered by one group, but obviously if you did touch them in your groups, we'll cover that. So the six themes that we want to talk about, and I don't know if we can flip, actually they're not all six there. It's basically social purpose. So they're the themes that came up as a result of the keys for keeping, attracting and retaining talent for globally around what you said the themes were: social purpose, learning organization, flexibility, skill sets, diversity and inclusiveness as one, and continuous feedback. So our challenge for the breakout sessions this morning was to take those key themes and say, okay, they are the trends, the strategic trends that we as individuals are seeing in our organizations or organizations that we deal with. How can we, for instance, on social purpose, social purpose is a big thing in relation to attracting and retaining staff. How do we at the foundation deal with that in terms of creating that social purpose, or thinking about that social purpose in terms of the foundation's employee value proposition? So effectively, I'm going to put to each of you as to how your group considered in relation to our employee value proposition around each of those. And I'm going to start, Giuseppe, with you, because you were the group number one and you had social purpose. So with that in mind,
yes,
what did you think about?
Well, concerning employee value proposition, the foundation should look at it from the perspective of the employee and actually take a wider view of what career means. Social purpose is very important and props up nowadays in many different, under many different angles, starting with the social development agenda of the United Nations 2030, but it's easy to get lost. So what would be recommended is a clear articulation of that social purpose, a clear articulation, a clear communication outside, but a clear communication to employees as well, and basically how that social purpose relates to the tasks at hand. There was also a suggestion that maybe social purpose should be considered more in the sense of the overall strategy and even the acting not only in relation to perceived users' need, but maybe having more of a general picture in at hand, or in considering more of a general picture, including social purpose, when setting the strategy. And we think that with millennials, in fact, social purpose can be a very powerful motivator. There was a lot more, but I would keep it
okay. I just will pass it over to James, because their group considered this as well. And I'm just going to dig a little bit deeper, and Giuseppe has talked about it in terms of potentially drilling down arguably to the more human level, so how it relates to the millennials. So did your group talk about that, James?
Yes, Joanna. I think that was one of the key things that came out of the discussion. When we started talking about the social purpose, we actually split it. We said there is what is the organization contributing to society? And I think there it's fair to say that most people in the group felt that the foundation has a very clear objective, very clear vision. It has been put out. It's available, but it's not human. In the sense, there's no human story attached to it. So, how does the foundation's work actually affect the individual, and would bring it down to the level that I think the other group has also mentioned, this human level, and how an employee contributes overall to this? The uniqueness of the foundation was also really stressed in that it is a global organization. It's a global language, IFRS, and it's a chance for people to really feel empowered to contribute on a global level, not necessarily a local level as well. And we felt that that was very key to getting the buy-in from employees, that they actually felt like they were actually contributing to society as large.
Can I interrupt you there?
Sure.
Did you come up with how you thought you could do that? I mean, it's all very well to say do it. Did you come up with some tactics?
There were some suggestions on, to give an example that was used in the group, was a bank makes a loan to a certain individual. The bank is in the business of advancing monies. It stimulates the economy and everything else. But how that affects that individual is actually the story that want to actually project. Yeah. So it's coming down to individual companies, where IFRS is used, how it has helped them, etc. Yeah.
So specific and using examples of, if you're writing an accounting standard, then a certain company will apply it or use it, and then it can raise capital and it can do all these wonderful things.
Yeah, and it's not only limited to listed. Okay. It's also unlisted can also make use of it.
Okay.
On the flip side, we talked about it was important for employees to also feel that they were directly contributing to society, in the sense that there is certain charitable organizations which are maybe sponsored or nominated by the organization overall. The general feel was this is really important. It seems to be something that millennials and Gen Zs are looking for, particularly. Mm-hmm. But if the foundation was to follow this route, they have to do it 100%. Yeah. The feeling was to pay lip service was in actual fact more detrimental than anything else. And I think those are the key... Sorry, I'm just reading my very bad handwriting here, but I think those are the key points that were coming up in that discussion. Okay. It was a lengthy discussion we had around it and was absolutely key to the whole talent attraction.
Okay, thank you both. Now, the other two groups might have considered that, but I'm actually going to move on and say come back to it if you have, because otherwise we're not going to cover the others. Surya, in terms of the learning organisation, which was the next one, your group had this. Where did you get to, if you like, in terms of, again, the employee value proposition for the foundation of being the learning organisation, and how does the foundation position itself as that?
There was a stimulated debate on this subject. In fact, we spent probably a little bit more time on this than the continuous feedback loop. And we acknowledge that the foundation is a relatively small organization, but a lot of challenges similar to those faced by large organizations or smaller departments within larger organizations. I think at the end of the day, what is important for the staff in the foundation is, does this add to their value? Now, you can define value whichever way you want. For those who are financially interested, when they leave the foundation, does their market value improve when they join a Big Four or a corporate or any other organization? Or for those who are more motivated by the softer values of learning and social purpose, do they feel that they have achieved what they want to achieve? And especially since the predominance of the views was that there's a different kind of person who works for this, not motivated by salary, it becomes very important that the organization has to be geared towards learning, because that's key and critical to them. I was told that about 50% of the staff are non-technical staff. So for the technical staff, you get learning while you're at it. The debate is then how does the foundation deal with the other non-technical staff. I don't think we came up with a solution, but we acknowledge that we need to find a solution for them. Of course, the broader soft skills training is provided to both, but in terms of future employability for both cohorts, how does it? How do we deal with it? It was believed that there's a clear market value for those staff who work in marquee projects. If you're in IFRS 9 or IFRS 17, there's a market demand for you when the project is completed. But if you were in the non-marquee projects, how do we establish that value proposition?
So just picking on that, and I don't know if you covered it, what I think came out of what the learning organisation is, that learning is far more and far wider than your, and it's partly in the skills section as well, than your technical skills.
Absolutely.
It's actually about I'm learning as a person, and I'm, you know, even it fits into the social thing, and I'm giving to charity, and I'm becoming a better person.
So there was one point we touched on that compared to an average for-profit organization, staff in the IFRS Foundation, even junior staff, have access to people at a totally different scale and level, and that links in with I can learn from experience. And we did speak to one or two of the junior staff, including Shalani, who was supporting us. I think they appreciate that they are treated in an inclusive manner. They are not treated as you're the junior most employee and I won't talk to you. And they feel as equals when they sit at the table and debate. But what we also believe in the room is perhaps the foundation doesn't do enough to advertise that fact, because if you did advertise that fact, then more people who appreciate that would come into the organization. I'll probably pause there. That was a gist of, there were a lot of other things said, but we'll...
Okay. Christian, your group considered this as well. Things to add to what Surya said.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we had this and the skill sets, and we had the discussion more together. But I tried to tease out what would be part of the learning organization. And I think one of the important things were the intentional versus incidental learning. And what we, at least what came up as a proposal, was maybe to look both on the continuous learning, but also do that deliberately, to promote the fact that you can have a horizontal career movement that would actually lead to better chances of a what's called vertical career movement, I suppose. So you actually have a plan, you demonstrate the plan, you also explain why it's important, you consider what do you actually learn by shifting or having these horizontal assignments. And that requires management resources. You need to look at each staff more or less. And we believe that can be applied both to sort of the operational and the technical staff. But also try to teach managers how do they speak about assignments. What is the learning potential within the assignments? Sometimes I suppose that can be hard, but quite often it's actually... Then the other part was secondments. A lot of staff at the ISB is secondments in. But what about secondments out of the ISB to, don't misinterpret, I mean, the real world, but to both the audit firms, preparers, standard setters, banks, etc. So it's actually a two-way. You could also allow staff to develop skills by saying that some of the projects are not directly within the normal competence. You could have communication assignments, IT technical assignments, that would actually, if you have an interest in that area, be a facilitator in promoting. So I think that was basically...
Okay. Might come back to that. I'm just looking at my time here, which scares me, but we'll keep going. So the third area was around flexibility. And James, your group considered the flexibility side. Comments on that?
So, Jonah, I teed it up specifically to the last sentence in that bullet the slide as to whether this would impact collaboration and teamwork.
Yep.
I think overwhelmingly the group came back that flexibility was imperative. It promotes better communications in a way, in order to accommodate your co-workers. It promotes a lot of out of silo thinking. It promotes also an employee being in a position to provide their best output as well.
So just, I'm going to interrupt you again. What do you, when you talk about flexibility there, what are you talking about?
So that was the key question that we also asked as well. What does it mean? And what was interesting in the group is how each organization seems to be at different stages in terms of flexibility. So flexibility is usually where you're working and how you're working, the manner in which you're working. Some organizations have a fairly disciplined way of doing it. You would put in a request to work at home this day of the week, whatever. Other organizations, in actual fact, under cater number of desks in the office, in actual fact, pushing people to work on an offline basis. And that ability to work at different times. What we did, however, hone in on was there are certain protocols. It's not a list of rules, but it actually relates to a different type of leadership that is required in these situations, because you're not always in the line of sight now of your teams. And that does impact on the leadership style itself as to how to get the best out of the teams. Did it inhibit collaboration? And I think, again, there was a very clear message. No, it doesn't inhibit collaboration. In actual fact, it can create a lot of input and creative ideas coming into the discussion. Again, it's going to require a very creative leader to bring the best out of the team. But the fact that we are communicating electronically very often is now par for the course for many organizations, and can well be used as a tool to get the maximum output out of employees.
Okay, thank you. Let's then move on to the next area, which was the... Sorry, flexibility. No, you're the only one that dealt with flexibility. Yeah. Skill sets. Christian, your group dealt with skill sets.
Yes, thank you. We agree that we need an agile workforce. We discussed a little bit what makes Actinia IFS unique in terms of what skills do we need, and something like location and network, career opportunity, impact the world, that was sort of the first on the social, but also the technical level of discussions with your colleagues. Those were some of the selling points. We need a diversity of skills, we need specialists in some areas, and ability to change roles to shift as well as from the specialities. There was a proposal that maybe you need to draw up some sort of skills experience matrix. What do you have? But more important, what is needed long-term, short-term in terms of the projects? So if you have a long-term project with technical issues, you need some skill sets that match that. But if you have a number of short-terms, it's different. We talked about the need for manager skills. And I think that alludes into the flexibility. So we need managers that can manage flexible workforce, they're comfortable with workforce not being present, and they can manage a transition from office to flexibility, and we learned that your new office supports the flexibility. Project management skills, also the soft core, and not necessarily hardcore, but also the people skills. Most projects here are people-driven. So there's some level of staff that is needed to do that. Communication skills was a really important part. And either you get that when you attract the skills, or you need to focus on that in the learning part. It would be an ability as well to draw on your own communication department or externally in order to actually say, for instance, if you do a 2-minute briefing, will you lose the audience? Are you able to do that, speak to the audience? And we recognize that's not something that comes naturally, but in all the other discussions, common letters, etc., it's all about communication, written or oral or both. You need some editorial skills as well, which is a specific skill set in order to ensure that there's consistency. Sometimes you have big projects, which is a seller. Other times you don't, so you need to have more a robust business proposal in terms of the skills you attract. Yes, but finally, I suppose we wrapped up and said, you need to define the problem. You can't solve everything. Is there one or two key problems that you need to focus on? Is it attracting talent? Is it retaining talent? Is it accepting the high turnover of people and then work with that, which is, I suppose, part of your business model?
So on that, Christian, what you've articulated there from your group is that the foundation does need the depth of skill as opposed to the breadth of skill, because what came out from the groups as a whole is that organizations now are looking more for individuals with a breadth and the ability to be out of their comfort zones, to analyze, to be curious, and to be questioning. Because, and from my experience, a large part of the reason for that is because people don't know how things are going to change and how AI is going to affect things, and therefore what roles the individuals will do. And it's all about learning and questioning. But I think what I'm hearing from you is that at this stage anyway, your group believe that the foundation is still needs to focus on the depth of the skill, so the specific skill for the role, as opposed to that breadth of, actually, I'm a curious person and I don't have any skills in anything else.
I believe what we ended up saying is that it's not enough being a curious person to work at the foundation. You need some base, something as a base knowledge that is needed within the project.
Yeah. Yep.
Having said that, it doesn't necessarily need to be an accountant, but you need some sort of master skill, but you also need the curiosity element, and I would assume that curiosity brings you to London, sort of.
Okay, and that most of your discussion was around the technical staff rather than the other side of the staff, the foundation.
Yes, because
staff.
A lot of that was on the skill sets, because we thought that was where it was a unique foundation compared to.
And so
but a lot of the learning was broader.
Okay. All right, thank you for that. And then we will move on to diversity and inclusiveness. And Giuseppe, obviously what we said there was everybody acknowledges that that's really, really important.
Yes.
However, it's a challenge to achieve. Did you solve all the challenges? How are we going to resolve all the challenges?
Yeah, of course we did. First of all, we noted and congratulated the foundation on its diversity strength in terms of gender, if I understood correctly, 60%, and 33 countries. So should we rest the case there and move on? I think that there is more to diversity than gender diversity. It's good to have it, of course it's necessary to have it, and country diversity. There is cognitive diversity, which is quite difficult to measure, but very important. We said that we have threats from the external environment. Ecosystems that are diverse are actually much more able to resist challenging from the external environment than ecosystems that are not diverse. But how do we achieve cognitive diversity? This is actually difficult in a context where you require very specialized skills, because hiring people with very specialized skills narrows the funnel down and necessarily narrows the diversity down. So it's not an easy problem to solve. And some suggestions were offered. And one was to hire disruptors. But it may not be practical for an organization that does not have a lot of scale to hire disruptors. So maybe you can achieve this diversity through partnership, partnering with other organizations and getting the disruption from there. A suggestion was made to actually increase diversity by collaborating or getting more input from standard setters. And so that is, I think, something to be looked at, and to be looked at also in the time dimension. One of the challenges that the organization may have is the fact that it cannot offer career growth because the organization is small and it cannot offer career growth. So we saw that the turnover is not necessarily bad. You can establish a strong alumni network. You can train people that become your advocate and ambassador somewhere else, and through this turnover actually achieve or increase your own diversity. Those were our main thoughts.
Thank you. I think that's really interesting, and I think it actually fits with the challenge that I put you with the skills around having the curiosity and the disruptors and out of the comfort zone, because certainly on the technical side, technical accountants all probably are very much of the same way of thinking. Yeah. And maybe a through few disruptors, and Neely is looking at me because I talk about throwing grenades into groups and things like that. And so maybe it is to have a few of those. Really, I certainly think that was really useful feedback. Continuous improvement. Last one. Surya, one of the questions you grappled with, what nuggets of advice did you have?
As I said, we spent a little bit less time on this, and perhaps because there was a broader consensus around the fact that the answer has to be yes on this. The question was, how do you do it? Although some of us in the room, we were a lot of Asians, we did remark that in Asia it's almost impossible to get your boss to say you've done a good job. But nonetheless, there is a younger generation that seeks that kind of input. Interestingly enough, there was mention of the new offices that you've gone to that does facilitate the kind of environment in which you can give and take feedback. Just bright sunlight for it makes a lot of change. We talked about the formal and the informal, the 360 degree type, but what was also discussed was that many organizations are moving into what we call instant feedback. You've done a good job, or you could have done better on this, but it has to be obviously conveyed in a manner where it is professionally received and accepted and delivered. One comment that we discussed, and this is something that I also held, was the moment you make it into a formal HR process, it after some time it tends to lose its value. So it's something that must be ingrained in the culture of the organization, that we constantly give, seek feedback individually, collectively. And to that extent, we kind of sidetracked a little bit into what does the organization do to build trust with each other? Because if you have trust, then you receive that feedback a lot better. And we did have input from board members and the staff that apparently many of the teams on their own, not sponsored by the ISB, conduct weekend trips, games and so on, and that is important. I think the culture must allow that free flow of just socializing amongst the staff across all levels, so that later when you get into a workforce, you trust each other a lot more when you give and take this feedback. And I just locked myself out, which is the problem with security systems. And then the last thing I think we talked about was also coaching, that there has to be an element of coaching around all this to motivate people, and how we invite external trainers and so on. So there was some mention made of what Lee is trying to achieve in terms of leadership, and we believe it's a continuous loop between motivation, leadership, feedback, so those themes can tie together in terms of the programs that you launch. That was pretty much it.
Last comments before I try to sum up, and I know Christian wants to say something.
That was just a small fraction, namely that continuous feedback was, from our point of view, also a matter of whether staff is able to present the work and their contribution, whether that is acknowledged also outside the organization to a certain extent. Can they receive direct feedback? Yes, but also can they be engaged, for instance, in outreach activities or other way demonstrating their contribution, which is also a way of getting feedback.
Okay. Thank you all very much. I know there is an awful lot more that came out of each of your groups, and that has been captured by the staff. We just don't have time for any more now, but what I'm going to try to do is summarise in my words what I heard you say. So for social purpose, where I think we've got to is that the foundation needs to clearly articulate what its social purpose is as an organisation, and actually that's relatively easy because it really does have a social purpose, but it's really important to bring it back to the human level and how the individual, there are individuals are able to contribute and how it contributes to individuals. So it's on both ways. Also really important that employees are directly contributing to society through their employment, whether it's through some charity organisation or something like that. And if we do it, we have to do it 100%. We can't do it in a half-hearted way. In terms of a learning organisation, we need to ensure that value has been created at the end of employment through learning in some way, shape or form, whether that is to go on to a bigger and better job, whether it's because you're a better person or whatever. That is what we're all about in terms of that employee value proposition, and we have to advertise the fact, again, out there to say that we are that learning organisation, and although you didn't say it, but I'm going to say it, humanise it again so that as an individual you can see how you can get that learning. And it needs to be intentional versus incidental learning, so do deliberate experience learning. Flexibility. Flexibility is fundamental to collaboration and teamwork. It does, though, require protocols, and it requires a different style of leader. But it certainly doesn't, we don't think that it inhibits collaboration in any way, shape or form. Skill sets in terms of the general trends being more curiosity, analysing, questioning, acknowledging that within the technical side anyway of the foundation, it really still is incredibly important that we get those depths of skills, but perhaps build more on getting some of those other curiosity skills. Diversity and inclusiveness. Yes, we've got some, we've got a lot in terms of gender and ethnicity, but we must not sit on our laurels, and the cognitive diversity is something that we need to think about how we are going to get that around, you know, and maybe it is in terms of the skill sets around looking at those that are curious or disruptors, have different letters on the Coles, Meyer, Brig, or whatever the hell it's called, thing, so that they do bring a different way of thinking. Continuous improvement, real-time feedback, broad consensus is the answer is yes, it has to happen. The question is how we do it, and again, it comes to getting the right type of manager to do it. We need to build the trust. There needs to be coaching. And one way is to consider external feedback. So I think that is the summary of what you four wonderful gentlemen said came from your groups. So on that note, as I said, thank you very much. And thank, just check, sorry, I should, that, is there any question from the floor or any comment, addition from the floor before we finalise this session? Nope. Excellent. Thank you very much.